All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
Well, Mark knows how that intro's supposed to end, and maybe we'll get it right next time. Welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. I'm your host, Julian Gill. We are back. We are live. Thank you for joining us on a Saturday morning, evening, nighttime, wherever the hell you are in this wacky world we live in. Daniel Wheeze joining us from the snowy north. Is it still snowy up there?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Just 6 more months of snow?
Exactly. And then we have a week of summer, and then it starts all over again.
A week of summer.
A week of summer. No, I've seen your summers, and they're absolutely beautiful up north.
They're great as well,
Also got 69th Blizzard Ken.
Hello.
And Marcus Almighty Mark.
Greetings.
And I'm pleased to announce that I'm in a far less pissy mood this week because I didn't have any technical issues prior to this episode starting. So I want to thank Ronnie Parker, Opal Archive, Bill Phelps, Austin Newland, AB, for joining us so far. And if you're just sitting there lurking, hi, as Dan would say. Good to see you. We're going to be doing more deathmatch of round three. We'll probably wrap up round three today with the way we're going. 15 songs have gone through. 30 have been through round three, and I believe there's 31 left if Julian's math adds up. So we'll see what happens with that odd number. We may have to just do a quick equalization to get it back on even numbers so we don't end up with something completely weird. But at the end of the day, it all ends how it ends. So that's the whole point to this this dumb shit that we're doing. So Dirk Vanderpoel, thank you for joining us. Kiss news from the week. What has been going on in Kissland? Gene's Facebook. We kind of went fast last week to get that in, and so that people could watch that Gene Simmons live cast. If ever anyone went into a live show without a script or a purpose, it seems that that is what Gene just decided he was going to do, a live thing, because there wasn't a lot of substance. Let's go to our resident Gene expert. Ken, what did you think of the live stream?
Yeah, there wasn't really anything new, except the interesting things was that they, you know, his band almost became openers on the Deep Purple tour, I guess, upcoming Deep Purple tour in the U.S., but that fell through, I guess. Could be money or timing, who knows. And then the other thing I found interesting, that he's going to be on American Idol in April for a couple of weeks. I'm guessing it's towards the end of the Idol in mid-April. So I think it's 2 weeks. He's probably going to be a mentor. They usually have a mentor part towards the end of the season. And I think he'll be there. And then at the finale, I'm thinking. So I'm wondering if they're going to do a Kiss song, whoever he's going to.
I find it odd that he's going to be on that.
Kiss was on Idol. I mean, they performed on Idol a couple times.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, I watched a bit of it. I didn't go live when it went on. I watched a replay of it on his channel. But he did, a lot of the times people were asking him these questions, and he always had the same sort of answer. Hard work is the answer for all your things that you want to do in your life. And I understand that, and I agree with him with that. But the thing that I don't understand is that he was putting down American Idol and all those things, like, you know, all these people that are on there, you know, they go on there, and then half of them, you never hear from them again. Why? Because it's all hard work that gets you to go in the end to become a popular musician. So why would he mentor something that he doesn't believe in? That's the thing I don't understand.
He's getting paid.
Okay, but still, put your money where your mouth is, though. I mean, if you don't believe in this shit, then don't go and do it.
He doesn't believe any of that shit, but as long as he gets paid, that's what he believes in.
I think he meant it from
zero substance, that guy.
I think he meant from the standpoint is some of these American Idol guys, winners or whatever, they don't want to put the hard work in after they, you know, somehow got lucky and became American Idol, but then they didn't, you know, put the hard work, continue to work hard.
There's the old mantra of hard work only gets you so far. You still need luck. You still need the right circumstances.
Who you know sometimes.
Right? Yeah. You know, it's not as simple as that. What's Gene's advice going to be in the music business? If your songs suck, find someone who's starving, who's a better talent than you, and buy their stuff from them.
The biggest thing from that interview was that Gene claimed he spit blood on the first show on the Lick It Up.
Oh, well, that's true.
I think he's remembering it correctly, so I think he's just flat out wrong.
No, I think he is. I think he's completely remembering it correctly, but he's conflating 2 days of production rehearsals with the first show itself. I think in Lisbon, 1983, he tried it during production rehearsals.
Yeah, but he didn't do it during the live show, and no, that is what
absolutely
what
it, not, because he would have known how ludicrous it was before there was... He would have tried it out. I don't doubt that, to see how it felt, how it looked.
Probably.
And when you saw that nice pretty pink blouse with blood all over it, it's not as cool as they.
He actually had a pink blouse. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
They all did. I think.
Again, it doesn't matter. But where's the real photographic evidence other than the fake Photoshop shit? You know, where are the people who attended the show? Because I think there were at least over 1,000 people there. So, again, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. But I think he is conflating. He certainly didn't sound like it when he was interviewed by Sounds a couple of days later. They were in Madrid at that time when the interview took place. So it was the next stop after Lisbon. So it's interesting. That's the whole thing that's great about Kiss that I love. There's still so much shit to learn, so many mysteries to unwrap, so many truths to, you know, buttress or turn into myths. It's fucking excellent. It's never going to be done. I'm always going to be entertained by this ludicrous band. So, talking about Gene, his Rhino box set went on clearance for, what was it, $79.99 or $89 if you wanted the statue and the coin?
Yeah.
I mean, Ken, again, going back to you as someone who purchased the, you know, the very first experience.
Right down there.
Yeah. Did it bother you that it was put on sale and that people are now...
Not really.
I want to say thank you to everyone who bought the Gene Simmons Vault supplement because that thing got a real bump this last week. Thank you, Rhino.
Yeah, I paid the good... I forgot how much it was, but I took it as when I went to see Gene, it was a meet and greet. The bulk of the price for me was, I figured, was going to be the meet and greet, which was fantastic. That whole thing was worth it to me. And the vault was the smaller price, you know, no more than could have been 500 with the whatever it is, the silly safe, as Ace says, and all this, I'm not hurt or butthurt by it because they let it go for a little, you know, nothing. It's just the book and the CDs, basically. I think it's great that it's you know, other people are able to have now, or were able to get it now. I guess it's sold out. So,
I think it's someone else who bought that first experience. I mean, we got the Eric Singer experience. We got the Ace Frehley experience. Yes. We got the Bruce Kulick experience.
And Gene, of course.
We got that really weird lineup trying to play stuff and bantering on stage.
Yeah.
We got the vault. I mean, I'm all for it. More people have it legitimately. Fantastic. Get it up on iTunes so that everyone can buy it if they so wish. Do it. Yeah. I've also said on the FAQ that I'm a firm believer that they should do, just like the Cult did with their massive box set, the Best of Rare Cult. They should do a Best of the Vault and really cherry pick the best sonic quality material from that to do in vinyl format as a gatefold. I guess there's probably some contractual shit that would prevent that sort of thing being done, and do a couple of outtakes, stuff that I know exists that didn't make it onto the vault. That is strictly Gene. That shit's ready to go. So it would be very cool. Mark, any thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think we were talking about that when it actually came out for those people who couldn't afford the $2,000 that it was to buy the safe version, that it would have been good to have a version for the people who wanted or just interested in the music and not the safe. And they did it. It only took them, 4 years or whatever to finally come around to do it. But I think it's a good idea because the people... A lot of the people, I think, are mainly in it for the music. I don't know many people who are interested in getting the doll or the coin or any of those other things, right? So it's a good idea.
Yeah, that freaking box is a pain in the ass, the fact that it's signed. Daniel, thoughts on it? Did you ever do any vaults?
No. They did one in prior to the Ken is rebuilding his home there, or did you bring the vault?
No. It was worth it because, you know, I got this.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
oh,
pretty
yeah,
cool.
You got the I got an empty vault, and you got
oh
the
no,
shell. Yeah.
They did a vault experience prior to so Gene Simmons' show in 2018 over here, but I didn't do it. I think that the thing you did seemed really cool with the different characters being at the vault experience, like Eric Singer and so on. That seemed really cool, but as you know, as a product, it doesn't do that much for me. I think it's good that they are selling it at a lower price and getting rid of some of the stock. I mean, they're just sitting there, lower the price and get rid of them and do yeah. create something new and sell it. So I think it's good. I think the product looks pretty cool, and the book seems to be a good one. And so if you have $80 over, buy it. I think you
it's
won't regret it. Yep, that's pretty cool.
And it's definitely worth getting. As opposed to another item that came out.
Okay.
Which was What's that? Lead us into it. I feel that I put a quarter in.
The $900 monstrosity that is the Creatures of the Night vinyl box, which is the most stupidest thing I've ever seen put out. Could you imagine what it felt like for being a person who bought the CD box to see that and realize that the only difference between that box and the other one is that it's just vinyl? As opposed to not CDs, and all the other schmutz that's in there is the exact same shit that's in the CD box. What an absolute, complete slap in the face to KISS fans that is.
What? People complain.
Because why would you... You're making them buy the same shit all over again just because it's vinyl.
No one's making anyone.
Oh yeah, but you know how KISS people are.
Well, that's their problem.
They have to go... They have to
that's,
buy it
that's
because...
True.
That's it, completely you know? Their... They have issues if they feel obliged.
The problem is KISS fans buying the same stuff over and over again
because they know they'll do it. That they're yeah, laughing in there.
I wouldn't create a whole lot of new stuff if I just could recreate or redo old stuff without putting an effort into it. If I could if I could do the same lesson over and over again every day, my favorite lesson, and getting paid, well, I would do that. But you can't do that with kids when you're a teacher. But KISS can do this, and that's because. KISS fans buy anything these days, unfortunately.
I didn't buy it.
Well, KISS fans seem to have a lot of extra money.
You're waiting for the markdown.
I'm waiting for either a big markdown or there's possibility I hear of another version that's just the vinyl only that'll be, like on Amazon or something eventually. So I'm hoping for that because I don't need the rest of that crap in there because I already have all that. Stuff, the book and so on. So they should have at the same time as releasing the CD box set, they should have released the vinyl box set at the very same time.
Initially there wasn't any intention to do anything outside of the format that they were doing, that an accompanying deluxe edition vinyl version, you know, and then kind of the tarted up single disc. So there was a uniformity, but so many people complained, why isn't this available? Metallica does this. Motley Crue does this.
Yeah.
David Bowie does this and he's dead. A lot of people complained that there wasn't a version. Now there is. It's put your money where your mouth is. And
yeah,
literally it is put your money because the price point
yeah,
is simply staggering.
Oh yeah,
stupidity.
I'm not sure what the wholesale is on that, and maybe Jason knows, but he probably isn't allowed to say because that's kind of industry info. But that's one hell of a markup when you do compare what people are putting out. Now, on the other side of that, the anniversary show live should be a standalone release because I think it is that cool, and it's something that I've listened to a lot. It is excellent. But, you know, it's like Def Leppard putting out the Pyromania Super Deluxe. Nearly every single part of that has been released. You've had a remaster of Pyromania. You've had the Deluxe Edition, which came with that fucking LA show from 83. It's like, is that all you have? Oh, no, we're going to now put in the Dortmund one and the videos. Big fucking deal. None of that is new. So there is one disc. I'm going to buy that fucking thing simply for the demos disc, and that's all I care about.
Wow.
Because I've got everything else. So I'll probably just do digital for that.
But it's not going to cost you $900, though, to do that. That's the big
difference. No, and that again, is KISS still has a reputation for being able to sell its fans things at a price point much higher than many other bands. Think of it. It's our fault. As consumers, we have paid through the teeth for access through meet and greets, to all these events, for stupid merch. We've brought it on ourselves. So now it's seen. We can do this legitimately because they've paid the money in the past. And again, it comes back to us. And Mark, they can't change anything. They can only release, while there are issues going on, allegedly, between KISS and Universal, they can only release stuff that is already approved.
So you'll see it. Yeah. You'll see the Destroyer box set in vinyl soon, too.
But still, you have to tip the hat. You have to tip the hat to KISS. Both the Creatures box set and the Destroyer box set looked awesome. I think they still put out some good products from time to time, while other bands don't manage to do that. So from time to time, they do great stuff. Don't you think that the Creatures box set is a good...
I have other box sets that are, to my opinion, better and cost half if that...
No one listened to Rush. No one listens to Rush.
No. It doesn't matter.
Rush this week. What are you talking about?
The fact of the matter is that there's other bands that do this stuff and do it for a lot less. It also depends on if you like the band or not. Sure, if you don't like the band, then you don't give a shit. But I like KISS. Would I like to have that box? Sure, but I'm not gonna pay that money for it. I mean, I could buy three other box sets that I like for that same money. So that
means you don't have fan bases like us who have the teeth.
So if I get you correctly there, Mark, you don't mind the product, but you mind the pricing. That's the problem.
Of course.
So the pricing is the problem. The product is pretty cool. So
yeah, I think the product is good. I mean, the only problem I had with it just to begin with as a product is that I would have hoped that maybe if they did the vinyl one, that maybe they would have put one or two different things just to give it a bit of a variation from the CD one. You know, I wasn't expecting a complete overhaul of it and a complete different thing. But, you know, maybe a one or two different things where you can say, oh, the vinyl one has this, for example, or this, or, you know, that didn't appear in the CD one. Overall, I think it's a great set. You know, there's a lot of things in there that I think people would enjoy, that, you know, getting the original versions of certain things, like the programs are probably going to be expensive, but now you have a chance to get it in this way, and that's that, right? So... But it's just the price. I mean, being involved in these kind of things, making vinyl and making posters and stuff like that for my releases. I mean, sure, my releases are not as big amount of stuff as these things, but I do know a little bit of the background information of how much this costs to make as opposed to how much they're charging for it. So there is a gross inflation of the cost here.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't sound like there's any...
Wait for the price to go down.
Yeah. Well, I'm not waiting for the price to go down. It can be zero. I still don't want it. I don't want that bulk in my apartment. I have no fucking use for it. I'm not going to play that. I don't play vinyl. I play music. Yeah. You know? And I play music conveniently. So Judas Priest's new album, I only have digital. So
it's a great album.
Wow.
Is it a great album? I haven't heard it yet.
I absolutely incredible. Love it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, fantastic. It is a very, very consistent album.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
Not half of it. Not half of it.
You're nuts, Ken.
No, I'm not.
You have to do insane. It's only rock and roll podcast on that one.
Yeah, I want to do
we can do
planning
that.
On doing a review of it, but I was planning on doing reviews of a lot of things last year and haven't been able to get it. Okay, let's get into the deathmatch, since that's what we're here for. Yeah. We've got two containers left. Black goes into pink. We've got something like 60 songs.
Black goes into pink.
That started this. Hey, get your mind out of the gutter.
Oh, no.
We've got like 31 songs left, so let's get through this and see what... stupid matchups we're getting today.
Stupid matchup. It'll be some hard ones. Yeah, for sure.
First one out, Getaway. Up against. Oh, shit. Trial by Fire versus Getaway. This just is not going to be a very difficult one, is it? Ken?
You never know.
I don't know. It is kind of difficult. I like both songs. So Get Away, Trial by Fire. I'm gonna have to go with Get Away because I just love the street vibe of it, the sound of it, of that song. Ace song, and I like Peter Criss, his lyrics on that one. Even though, you know, I do like the Gene song, but I always like Get Away. You know, I never turned that one off. Love it. I just love that one. It's kind of a hidden one that no one talks about ever, but it's still a pretty darn good song.
A really poppy song, you know?
Yeah,
it is.
Talking about Peter, he performed last night at the Ricky Allen Raven Foundation gig.
No, he did.
In New York City. So nice. I don't know what song he did. I know he was sound checking Don't You Let Me Down. But Daniel.
I like both songs. Of course, the Gene song from the Asylum album is kind of a throwback to the 70s Gene. It's like a... Isn't that the one he did, that cover of, that we always talk about, Vertigo? Or
no, it's a different one.
No, it's a different song.
That's a different song. Okay. Yeah. But it's kind of similar to that one. A cool vibe, cool Gene song, but the other one is... No, it's classic Kiss. Get Away, it's actually an Ace Frehley song, but he didn't have the guts to sing lead vocals back then, so he let his friend Peter do it. And I think that was a good choice. I think it was good that Ace didn't have the guts to sing lead, because Peter pretty much kills this song. I mean, the vocals on this one is awesome. And I also like the lyrics. If you compare the lyrics... Getaway is much better, I think, than the Asylum song. So I'll go with Getaway.
I actually think Trial by Fire is a very good song, Mark.
It is.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Our fellow Asylum fan just dissed Asylum.
But sorry about that.
Peter Criss love.
I disagree. I mean, lyrically, I mean, Getaway is probably as grade three lyrics as it comes. You know, I got a Getaway. Come on.
Yeah, but I feel Getaway is pretty cool. When you're feeling down in the dumps, you know, when you feel, when you don't like, when you want to get away, when you want to go somewhere else.
Okay,
I listen to this.
Now it's my turn.
Okay, Mark.
Okay. Wow.
Anyways, cool. What I was just going to say is that I think that honestly, this song, Trial by Fire, it's not like the greatest song ever, but I love Asylum. I think that whole album is brilliant. And even the Gene songs are great on there. I mean, usually Gene is like, you know, doing garbage around this time period, but he's doing really good stuff on this album. Yeah. And I like the song. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't dislike Getaway. But I mean, I think as far as what gets me more excited to listen to, I'll listen to Trial by Fire over Getaway. I mean, Getaway is fine, but it's just a 12-bar blue. That's all it blues. I mean, come on. Anybody could have wrote that. Daniel, you could have wrote that and then just got Ace to write lyrics to it, and that's that. Right. You know?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. So I won Trial by Fire.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Nothing matters. But...
All right.
Julian, what would you have voted for? Would you have gone Dressed to Kill or Asylum?
This is actually more difficult than it would seem, because I love Trial by Fire. I do think it is a really cool song. But you're going up against Ace and Peter, which are a pretty darn cool combination. I would have had to have gone with Getaway, just because I think Peter sings the hell out of it, and it's a cool little song that fits perfectly on that album. But Trial by Fire, it wouldn't have been easy. I would have suffered slightly. All right, next up, I Still Love You versus Big Gun, Detroit Rock City. So this is going to be...
Sweep.
I don't know. Think of how great Paul Stanley's vocal is on I Still Love You.
Yeah.
Then compare it to... Did you know it was Mark's birthday this week? Destroyer turned 48.
Of course.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Happy birthday,
Destroyer.
God.
I couldn't believe it wrong on Facebook.
Wishes I got.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Detroit Rock City or I Still Love You?
Well, Detroit Rock City, of course. I Still Love You. Great vocals. But a pretty slow and long song. Great solo. You really have to be in the mood to go through all of I Still Love You, even though it's a great version on the Unplugged album in 95, 96 there. And that's a good version as well. And the studio version is great, but you can't go against Detroit Rock City. So I vote for Detroit Rock City.
All right, Mark. Can you vote against Detroit Rock City? Let's put that to the test right now while his vote counts.
Well, I mean, I do like I Still Love You. I think it's a great song. It's on one of the great records of that time, Creatures of the Night, which is grossly overpriced right now if you're looking to buy it. But the thing is, though, that Detroit Rock City is a classic. Any way you slice it, no matter who's involved with it, whether it's, you know, and Bob is involved with it, yes, I know. And, you know, that alone would have probably given me a reason to vote against it. But the song overall is really well done. I mean, I think it's one of those songs that if I'm going to listen to anything off of that album or play anything off of that album, it is probably Detroit Rock City. And I've played it numerous times with people and bands and jam nights and stuff like that and really enjoyed playing it. It's a great song. It's well written. So, I mean, it would be stupid to kind of go against it just for spite. You know what I mean? And most people think that I go against these songs for spite, but it's really not. No. There's lots of things about these songs that I don't like that he's done to them, right? Which live versions of them kind of remedy, right? But this is the one song where I think that the studio version is still very well done. And if, you know, the only thing that I have a strike against it is just that whole, you know, minute and a half introduction, which is just like, God, get over with that whole part. You know, it's just so long before it actually starts up. But other than that, the song is great. And yes, the pianos are in there, but I can tolerate it on this song.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that sucks about Detroit Rock City is the single edit. Ken.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Imagine if I Still Love You was sped up. Like if they had a sped up version of that one, I thought that would, that would have been pretty good too, I think still. But yeah, if I listen to I Still Love You as many times as Detroit Rock City, there's no way I could stand I Still Love You anymore. And but I can stand Detroit Rock City cause it's such a great song. And, I never get tired of hearing Detroit Rock City. So that wins for me.
Yeah, to be obviously honest. Yeah, I mean, come on. Detroit Rock City.
Yeah.
Contender, yeah. You know, in that very...
One of the biggest classics. Of.
Yeah, depending on how things work out, it could be there at the end. So.
Yep.
All right, next up is going to be... See, Mark can be objective, people. You think he just hates Bob Ezrin there?
He objects a lot.
All right, so here, we're straight up with another one. A Million to One.
Ooh.
Versus I Love It Loud.
Yeah.
Wow. This is painful. This is very painful. And Mark, you get to go first on that.
This is interesting because each of them have their strengths as far as songs go and as far as like the production and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, I Love It Loud was picked for a reason. It's a very powerful song. I mean, when you hear those drums at the very beginning of that song, I remember the very first time I heard it, I was like, wow, what the hell is that? Like, the drums were so enormous. And those vocals, you know, hey, that whole thing was like, wow, this is like, this is Kiss. I can't believe it. I mean, especially, could you imagine, like, someone like Ken, who listened to, like, The Elder beforehand, and then all of a sudden this comes out. He's like, holy shit, this is fantastic, you know? What a comeback, you know?
Cool video as well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what it has going for it. Million to One is on a record that I believe is Ken's favorite non-makeup album, Lick It Up. So everything on there is pretty fantastic, which is, you know, I'll agree mostly it is. This song is one of the great songs on here. I mean, I think most people say that it's probably one of the best power ballads. I don't know why they lump it in that category, but if you're going to leave it in that, I can understand. But it does have Paul Stanley at his very finest vocally. There's some great guitar playing and some great chords and stuff like that. The way they structured it is fantastic. So it's kind of it's not an easy selection by any stretch of the imagination. But I guess for me, I'm going to go what my heart tells me to say. And I've always been a Creatures guy over Lick It Up. I've always liked that album just slightly better than Lick It Up. So I'm going to go with I Love It Loud.
I just noticed that Daniel has my least favorite Stones album behind him.
Your least favorite, huh?
Oh, yeah, God. Black and Blue.
You're crazy, that's, man.
That's a tough album.
It's Daniel's favorite.
It sounds good, but it's not that great sonnet writing-wise.
God, that selection, there's like three songs on there.
Like Sticky Fingers. Like,
good enough.
All right, Ken. I Love It Loud or
A Million. Yeah, I mean, Mark was right, you know, when I Love It Loud, or when, you know, the Creatures album came, and I just, you know, kind of blew my mind, you know, after The Elder and Unmasked and Dynasty, you know. So, yeah, I just love everything about I Love It Loud. The chant and the chorus, you know, it's catchy. The fade out, fade in, how they did that was cool. I mean, the whole thing was, you know, very well done. And they kept it in the set forever, you know. So, but A Million to One, I do love that. It's one of those hidden, you know, great songs that are out there that we don't talk about enough. And but I Love It Loud for me.
Yep. All right, Daniel.
I like both songs. I Love It Loud is great live, great video, great drums. But it's a bit overplayed for us as Kiss fans. You know, we've heard it over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I get that. I guess that has something to do with my decision, because I'll have to go with A Million to One. Was that the other one? Yeah.
Yes.
A Million to One. Yeah. I think A Million to One is great on Lick It Up. But I also enjoyed the live version that Paul Stanley did in 06, 07 on that DVD. And that showed what it could do live. You know, when he sang that one live, I think it was even better than on the album. But also the solo, I really enjoy the solo, the guitar solo on the studio version. I think it's a great one. And I'm not much for power ballads, but this is like, you know, a power ballad mixed with some rock and roll. It's not that sappy and slow and you know, it's a cool song, and you can play it like a rock song. But with those vocals, it just pushes it over the top. So I have to give a vote for A Million to One. It's one of his greatest power ballads.
You know, I'm glad to see that get a vote. I mean, it is great, and I'm glad you mentioned the 2006-07 The Twin Tour. It's a shame he didn't get out to Europe for that. It was just North America and Australia. Stunning performance, but this is about the studio album.
Did you all go to that tour? Mark,
I did.
Did you see Paul on that?
No, I didn't see him, no.
No, I missed it, surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, it was at the Fillmore, which is like a mile from me, so there was no excuse. So,
you could walk there.
I would have loved to have seen more of that band live. They were really good. Security was a pain in the ass that night at the venue. They were really going hard for people with cameras and all that, so I didn't get to
one of the film usual.
Yeah, but I got to just sit there and enjoy the fucking music.
That's great.
It was really good. All right, next round. Take It Off.
Yeah.
Baby Driver.
Mm-hmm. Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Ken, get us started with that one. I need to look up how Baby Driver has made it this far.
Probably because of me.
Because it beat Seduction of the Innocent in the last round.
I love Baby Driver. I think it's a really good, cool song. Actually, I really enjoy it.
And it beat Rock to a Timer in the first round. There we go.
There you go.
Well, they're both weak songs. Yeah.
And I picked Baby Driver, I think, on that case, too. So I got to. What's the other song?
Take It Off.
Take It Off.
Yeah, Take It Off. I do like Take It Off. It's a cool revenge song. Sorry, Lonnie. But I'm going to go with Baby Driver. I just like the whole vibe of it. I really do. Just the, you know, it's just, it makes me feel of drive, you know, sound of driving or whatever. I don't know what it is about it. But yeah, like the great
an engine revving.
What, some of the best vocals by Peter again. I mean, really, really wails on that one. And great guitar solo, of course, and the whole bit. Take It Off is pretty good. I don't think it's the, you know, one of the better songs on. I mean, it's a pretty good song on Revenge, but I got to go with Baby Driver. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Daniel.
Well, Baby Driver is a cool song, cool vocals. Not one of my favorites of Love Gun.
Rock and Roll Over.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Over, sorry.
Love Gun with
Paul Stanley on stage here.
I was hoping it would be the lead motive on that film that came out a few years ago, Baby Driver, if you remember that one.
Should have been
on it. Yeah, it was nowhere to be seen on that one. That was a big letdown. But Take It Off, I think, is an 80s song on a 90s album. Some tits and ass. But the riff is sort of a Led Zeppelin riff, I think. Paul Stanley's vocals are great, of course, on this one. And I do like the studio version more than the live version of this one, because especially in the chorus when he belts out the "Take It Off" live, they took it down an octave and sang it, you know, in a lower register. It wasn't as cool. But on the studio version, it's really a kick-ass song, cool Bruce Kulick solo. So I'll have to give my vote to Take It Off.
All right. Mark gets to be the decider. You're the king maker.
Again, this is something that I find not so easy to make a vote for, because we have, you know, Baby Driver, which is on my favorite Kiss album of all time, Rock and Roll Over. So that already has leverage there because of that. You know, Peter Criss is a great singer. He has a great voice. And Gene Simmons, ironically, I think he mentioned that in his live thing that he did too. Or I think it was him or somebody. No, it was a different thing I watched where they were saying that Peter Criss has the best sounding voice of all the Kiss members, but isn't as good a singer, which I agree. But he has a great sounding voice. That whiskey voice is amazing.
Yeah.
So it helps with this song, definitely. The only strike I have against this song is that essentially it's just really one riff, the whole song. Dan, dan, dan. It's just like the same thing through the whole song, right? Take It Off is a song that is not exactly, you know, the most complex of songwriting either, but it's pretty good. It doesn't have to be. And it's very good. I think the production is decent, considering, again, who's involved with this song. But, you know, it's not a bad song by any stretch. Paul sings really good on this song. I've always enjoyed this song. And, of course, you know, you can't complain if you went to see the show live when you saw all the girls coming out and dancing around stage to the song. I mean, that in itself, if you're a guy or if you're a girl who likes women, wouldn't disagree to this sort of a, you know, sort of situation. So again, it's very close for me, but in my heart, I'm going to have to go with Baby Driver just because of the fact that I do love Rock and Roll Over that much more than Revenge.
I'm a happy guy.
Yay. It made it through.
Well, yeah, no, Baby Driver, it's an unusual song stylistically as well. Like Mark said, it basically hinges on a single riff, but it's just like someone sitting there pedaling, you know, an engine, you know. So it's cool from that perspective. So, and it's a Peter vocal, and Peter has a great voice. So
there you go.
I want to hear the demo. The original, not the one with Gene.
Not the Gene one?
Not Gene being pompous. next up, pompous. King of the Nighttime World.
Okay.
Versus Easy as It Seems. Let's see if this round is as easy as it seems. Daniel, please.
Even though King of the Nighttime World is a cover, I think it beats the other one in every area. King of the Nighttime World is such a perfect Kiss song. The lyrics, the riffing, everything about the song seems like Kiss. And it wasn't until much later I got to know that it was indeed a cover. It could have been an original song. And when you listen to the original by... what was his name? Ken Fowler, whatever was it called?
Ken Fowley?
Yeah. Mark Antony?
Mark Antony. So the Kiss version is, of course, superior. And the other one off of Unmasked, I never really liked that one. I think it was middle of the road, you know, vanilla, popcorn, nothing special. Nah, an okay song, but against King of the Night and World, it doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, it's Hollywood Stars. Anyone who hasn't heard it, go on YouTube. And they did a studio demo in 1974 for the song. Completely different feel, but you can just see what Kiss, when you kissify something,
yeah,
it really does become a star. All right, let's go to Mark.
Okay, again, this is not as easy as one would think. I love Unmasked. I mean, I'm wearing the shirt here, you know, the Unmasked shirt. And I've been a big fan of, like I said, it's one of those records that came into my collection late, and I've loved it very much. I listen to it quite a bit, actually, still. I mean, I bought a lot of copies of it for some reason. I got like 12 versions. And I do like it. I think that, you know, it's a victim of just bad mix, in my opinion, at that time. But, you know, the King of the Nighttime World is another one of these songs where there's something about it, about the guitar playing, that really connected with me. Now, again, it's on that album, you know, but, and I did mention this before when we did talk about this song in a prior podcast. Oh, there we go.
Sorry. Oh my God.
And that is that this is one of the songs that I really enjoy because of the fact that it's, of all the songs, it's probably the least Ezra-nified. There's no pianos that are audible in this. It's very much a rock and roll song in its fullest extent. And Paul's fantastic in this. I really love the vocals on this, and I love the arrangement of it. So I'm going to go with King of the Nighttime World.
All right, Ken.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what Daniel said earlier with the, it sounds so much like the real Kiss, like they wrote the song, and it fits them so well. So I have to go with King of the Nighttime World for sure. That's an easy win. I, you know, easy as it seems, it's a good catchy song off of Unmasked, but King of the Nighttime World just works better as a Kiss song.
Yeah, I mean, easy as it seems. I mean, that Paul was showing his R&B roots there. I mean, it was, again, yeah, like Baby Driver, it's a song with a different vibe entering Kiss's sonic and audio output. So it's interesting, but it sure as shit is not beating King of the Nighttime World, which just personifies the bombast of a Kiss concert at the time.
Yeah.
All right, we got an interesting matchup next. Tears Are Falling.
Oh.
The song that made me a fan. Versus Rocket Ride, the song that should have been played live by Kiss.
Yeah.
Their last top 40 hit in the 70s. Mm-hmm. We are starting with Mark on that one.
Okay, so here we go. This is one of these ones where I can see the tomatoes flying already on this one. But, you know, again, we're talking about a record that's very high on my rankings here, you know, with Asylum, okay? And, you know, Tears Are Falling is probably easily one of the better songs that they did throughout the whole 80s, in my opinion. I mean, what a great guitar solo in that. I mean, the fact that they gave Bruce Kulick almost a minute to do a guitar solo in that song tells you how much they loved him. Rocket Ride, I think, is a good song. It's, you know, it's good. Everybody keeps saying, oh, Ace, Ace, Ace. But don't forget, Sean Delaney had a lot to do with that song as well. So I wouldn't just give it all the credit to Ace on that. It is sort of a signature song on that album, I would say, and on Alive 2. But honestly, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, what do I listen to more? Tears Are Falling every day in the week compared to Rocket Ride. I mean, Rocket Ride is a good song, but to me, and I can, here come the eggs. Rocket Ride to me is just a B version of Shock Me. It's the baby sister of Shock Me. It's not even anywhere near as good as Shock Me. So I just think that's just a leftover. So
it's the one Ace for me record for Love Gun.
Well, but they didn't. So, you know, could have, would have, should have, right?
Okay, so Rocket Red?
No. Tears are false.
All right, Ken.
Okay. Rocket Ride is so much better than Tears Are Falling, for me at least. The whole vibe of the song, the riff, the guitar playing, the solo. Even Ace's vocals are pretty darn good on that one. I mean, gosh, you know, it was pretty good back then. Yeah, it's typical kind of Ace in the way of subject matter, but man, that thing just rocks. I love it.
You know, Ken, it's really about entering a black hole.
Well, that's all right, you know. I like the whole thing. I don't know. Tears Are Falling, yeah, obviously great song, hit song, great guitar solo in the middle, you know, different, but if I had a choice, Rocket Ride wins by a mile for me.
Unfortunately, Ken, you don't have a choice. Daniel has the choice about which one's going to win.
All Daniel, right.
Rocket Ride.
Well,
a song about space.
Can we have a tie? Is that possible?
I'm the one that says that.
Yeah.
I won't steal. If I can't do that, you can't.
Take a page out of Ken's book. No. This is really hard for me because for me, Tears Are Falling was one of the songs that made me a Kiss fan. So, and I remember watching the video in the mid-80s. I remember thinking that Paul Stanley looked so cool in the video. Then later on, I discovered Rocket Ride. And when I started playing a little bit of guitar, that was one of the songs that really stood out to me. I liked the intro and the effect Ace used in the beginning. And the riff in that song is probably one of my favorite riffs. And I disagree with what Mark says about Shock Me being a way better song than Rocket Ride. I think I prefer Rocket Ride, instead of Shock Me. I think the riff is way cooler than the Shock Me riff, even though that's a good song as well. So it's really hard. Bruce Kulick's solo, of course, is a great one, one of his best ones. I know Paul Stanley told him what to play almost. He sang the solo to him. I think I have to go Rocket Ride, actually. I didn't think I would go that way, but today it feels like Rocket Ride is what... I've listened to Ace Frehley a whole lot because I'm going to be on a podcast about the two first Frehley Comets albums, so I have to go with Rocket Ride, but I could go either way, but today it's Rocket Ride.
Sometimes there you go Rocket Ride, but you can go either way. All right.
Yeah.
It's a tough one because Rocket Ride just showed, I mean, the vocal, compare the vocal with Shock Me and what a year singing live in concert every night or a few months, actually, because it's 77. You know, it really made a big difference to Ace's confidence as a singer, competence as a singer, and I think really set him up for the solo album, a nice progression. So it would have been tough, but I would have had to have made the same choice, Daniel, if my vote counted, as much as Tears Are Falling is an important song to me. All right, next up, again, the two heavy hitters. Ken, you're going to get us started with Unholy versus Cold Gin.
Oh, wow.
That's probably the toughest.
Studio versions? One.
Yeah, studio versions we're going at, right? This. Okay, not doing live, so... I gotta give it to this to Unholy. I know Cold Gin is such a classic and I enjoy the riff. It's a little slow on the first album. I like the break in it. It's one of those songs they played all, you know, live forever too. But I'm gonna go with Unholy because it was such a great, you know, return to form for Kiss and for Gene in particular. The guitars in that, the sound, great. Bruce Kulick lead, man. Production, the whole bit. So I'm going to go. It's a tough one, but I got to go. I'm going to go with Unholy this time, at least.
Interesting. Lonnie approves, by the way. Unfortunately,
Lonnie. I know Lonnie would approve that.
Yeah, he'll be happy. Now, will he still be happy after Daniel makes his choice? That's a different matter. Daniel.
Good question. I think Live Cold Gin is probably one of my favorite songs. I really enjoyed it on this last final Kiss tour. It got my juices flowing, you know, when I heard that one, the opening riff. What's happening? Okay, I heard a sound there. Okay, so live, Cold Gin takes the cake easily. But studio versions, I'm not as sure. The Cold Gin version on the debut is kind of slow and sluggish, while the Unholy version, the studio version, is probably one of my favorite production on any Kiss album, that song. When I heard that video the first time on MTV in the early 90s, I was blown away. So I have to go with Unholy studio version.
All right.
Actually, Mark. It wasn't that hard. Way better than the studio version of Cold Gin.
Well, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I mean, like I said, the first time I heard Unholy, I thought, you know, I couldn't even believe it was Kiss. You know, it was so much heavier and than anything they had done before. And it just, great guitar play. I mean, Bruce Kulick really stepped up on that album, guitar playing wise. He got an injection of coolness in his lead playing. So, yeah. And I liked Cold Gin, of course. I mean, it's such a great song, right? But I mean, on the first album, it is a bit sluggish. I mean, I almost, you know, would it have been better? I mean, let's put it this way: the live version of it is good, but I still think that I would have picked Unholy anyways because just of the impact that it had on me when I first heard. So Unholy.
All right, Lonnie approves, and he's going to be very proud of you boys. All right, next round, Naked City versus Watching You.
Daniel. Oh, two Gene.
Gene versus Gene.
I like both songs, of course. Naked City, the best song from Gene on Unmasked, and Watching You is, of course, a classic, and it even sounds good on those early albums, Watching You, even though I prefer the Alive version, or actually the Alive 3 version I like as well. Watching You is kind of a cool riff in that one, and variants of the riff all through the song, and I like the way it's structured. While the other one, I'm leaning more towards the lyrics being cool. I like the lyrics in Naked City. So I enjoy both songs, but I have to go with Watching You on this one.
All right. Mark.
Again, I love Unmasked. This is one of the songs that I think were really, really well done. Gene's bass sound in this song is just fantastic. Just the sound of it, the tone of it. It sounds like he's playing a Spector bass. It sounds so upfront, very active pickup sounding. It's really, really great. Fantastic. I absolutely love it. And it's one of those songs that I was a bit surprised that it was, you know, a Gene song. You know, considering the history of his writing, you know, it seemed a little bit more, I'm not going to say serious, but it's a little bit more thought out, and the lyrical content is a little bit more mature, let's just put it that way, for Gene. Watching You is great. I've always liked Watching You as well. And there's nothing wrong with it, so I'm not going to say there's anything bad about it. I mean, all the riffs in it are fine, and it sounds good. But I'm going to go with Naked City on this one, because I think that it's just a song that just impacted me just a little bit more. And I, every time I hear that song and that bass guitar, I mean, I can't help but turn that up a bit louder when I listen to that song.
Cool. Ken, you're going to become the decider of which Gene song you think deserves to move forward. And he's watching you. And you're muted.
I'm muted too. You're right. He's watching me, but he can't listen here to me because I'm muted. All right. Yeah, I mean, I like Naked City. One of the best songs off of Unmasked. Really cool song. But I love watching you. I love to hear that song. I love the riff of it. The whole vibe of it sounds great. Yeah, it's one of my favorite, you know, kind of old songs by Kiss and by Gene. So it's kind of underrated. And then some people don't like it, but I've always loved that song. So I have to go with Watching You on this one.
And Watching You goes through. What do you prefer? The Hotter Than Hell version or the demo?
Oh, good demo. God, I haven't heard the demo in a while. I want to say, I don't know. I can't remember. Oh, maybe the demo. I don't know. I know the demo is good. So I can't. I haven't heard the demo in a while. So I want to.
We've got some homework. Demo.
Yeah, I know. I want to say the demo, but
moment this show is over, dig out that demo.
The album version is great though too. So we'll just go with that.
All right. Next up, I hate this round because
oh no, what's happening?
The Oath versus Got to Choose or Got to Chew. Depending on
the Oath and Got to Choose.
Got to Chew.
Okay. Yeah.
Mark's going to get us going. Mark. Hmm.
The Oath or Got to Choose? The Oath is probably the best pure rock song on The Elder. I mean, that's very, very rocking. It's sort of back to Paul singing the way we kind of want him to sing. Sure, there's a little falsetto moments here and there, overall, it's, you know, Paul Stanley at what we enjoy. Got to Choose. I mean, I do admit that this is a song that I think I brought Daniel back on board a little bit when we did our guitar riffs episode. He when I played it for him, he's like, "Oh, that riff doesn't sound as bad as I remember it." So he actually kind of liked it a little bit better. After I played it. So and I like Got to Choose. I always thought that it was a catchy song. It's kind of difficult, but when you think about it from the perspective of we're choosing these songs based on the studio versions of them, Hotter Than Hell has always been a record where I've kind of had a little bit of issue with the sound of it. I think it always suffered the songs on there. True. And again, and this is going to be a 3-for-3 here. I can't believe this. Another Ezrin touched song here. So would I go against it on here? No, I think I think that The Oath is good, and I'm going to go with The Oath this time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mark has been converted.
He
is now a Bob Ezrin aficionado. Daniel.
This is a really strange episode. Mark going with Ezrin and me going against Asylum all the time. I don't know what's happening. But this one, actually, Mark, as you said, turned me on to Got to Choose once again, because when I could hear the chorus so clearly, the verses so clearly, the guitar so clear when he played, I actually went back and listened to the song once again. I had given up on the song. I never really liked it. But I guess I hadn't heard the guitar as well as when Mark played it. So actually, it's your fault, Mark. But if you hadn't played that stuff for me, I would have gone with the Elder song easily. But since that episode, guitar riffs of Kiss, I've kind of rediscovered the Got to Choose song, and I know it's one of Paul's favorites of all time.
Yeah.
So I have to go with Got to Choose.
I mean, that doesn't bother me now, because I feel kind of honored that I made you like that song. So I approve.
Yeah. It was approved by Mark.
What a great riff as well. I mean, both of them have fantastic riffs. Both of them are really fun. I love in like the mini sets that they were doing before shows, the sound checks. Got to Choose was my got to have for those. Ken, you're going to break a tie here. The Oath of Got to Choose.
Got to Choose is a pretty darn good song.
It is.
I really enjoy The Oath a lot more, though, than it. I love the way it rocks. I love Eric's drumming on it. You know, falsetto thing doesn't bother me. I mean, it works, you know, doesn't do a whole lot of it. But it's a great rocker of a song. One of the best songs on The Elder. So I'd rather listen to that much more than Got to Choose. So Got to Choose kind of like it's a one of those songs that are kind of, you know, it's, I don't know if it's too slow for me or what it is, but I definitely like The Oath better. So anyway, The Oath wins for me. Wow.
I did not see that happening.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to keep going because we're going to get this round three completed. So
let's go.
Got a few more picks to go. I think probably three or four. Next up is Calling Dr. Love versus Heaven's on Fire.
Oh, Ken. Lord.
Nah, come on. It's easy.
Daniel's now melting in his seat.
That's easy.
We're torturing Daniel today. He doesn't like this game. He's like, make it stop.
Oh.
Come on.
Well, yeah, come on now. Ken, what's it going to be?
It's going to be Calling Dr. Love for sure. Not just because of Gene. I mean, the great riff, catchy song, and just for that guitar solo in the song. Where Tears Are Falling doesn't have any guitar solo, right?
Heaven's on Fire. You mean.
Heaven's on Fire.
I mean, Heaven's on Fire. Well, they're kind of one and the same.
Anyway, no. They are definitely not
different.
Almost.
Come on.
Written in the same vein, kind of. Just for the guitar solo alone in Calling Dr. Love is enough. The whole build up of that is just fantastic. It took a while for Gene to make that song happen, flesh it out after doing it all, Bad Lovin' and all these other songs. It finally got it, and it made it a great song, and it was a hit song too. But I just that's one of my first favorite songs by Kiss, so I gotta go with that. Great song. Calling Dr. Love.
All right, Daniel.
One of my first favorite songs, you said. Yeah, that goes for me as well. But for me, it's Heaven's on Fire is my first Kiss song. So I can't go against Heaven's on Fire because without Heaven's on Fire, I wouldn't be sitting here. Nothing of this would happen because that is what made me a Kiss fan. However, I do enjoy Calling Dr. Love, and I think you made a great point when you talked about the solo. The solo in Calling Dr. Love is one of Ace's best solos from my point of view. The solo in Heaven's on Fire isn't not even a solo. However, the intro of Heaven's on Fire is so unique. The singing from Paul Stanley made it a hit all over Europe, you know. Especially in Sweden, Heaven's on Fire is still a well-known song over here, and I think you have to give that to the Paul Stanley vocals in this song, one of his best performances of all time, I think. And you have a lot of cool stuff going on with Gene and him singing the chorus in different octaves. I love that. But it's really, really simple. So it's perfect if you want to start out playing guitar, as it was for me. So this is one of the first songs that made me interesting in playing guitar. So Calling Dr. Love, great song as well, but I have to go with Heaven's on Fire on this one.
All right. Mark, you're going to be the boss of this lineup.
Well, Dr. Now, Love, here's the thing. On fire. Here's the thing. Calling Dr. Love is on Rock and Roll Over. I love that album, as you all know. It's a great record. It's my favorite record. And, you know, that record has so much on it. You know, I Want You, you know, Making Love, you know, there's so many great songs on here that
made that album.
Yeah, that made it strong, and that made it, you know, even if Calling Dr. Love wasn't on there, I think it would have been a fantastic record.
Yeah.
Whereas Heaven's on Fire is on a record that doesn't have as much great material on it. And Heaven's on Fire is a very important song historically for many reasons, I think, because Kiss were really floundering still at this time. And I remember reading many books where they said that after that album came out and Heaven's on Fire came out, that promoters and them started getting more, you know, belief in Kiss again. They started giving them extra dates to play and stuff like that, and the tour started getting better. It was the first platinum album for a very, very long time at that
double
point
platinum
that they got. So Heaven's on Fire is very important. And I have to agree with Daniel about the whole thing about the Europe thing, because I know that when I went to Europe, my cousins knew very little of Kiss except for Heaven's on Fire. And they lived in Czechoslovakia. And so that song was pretty known even there in Europe. Yep. So I'm going to do something that people would probably not expect here, but I'm going to go with Heaven's on Fire because I think it's a more important song historically and in Kiss history. I think that without this song, who knows what would have happened with Kiss.
Holy shit.
Way to go, Mark. Way to go. I didn't see that one coming.
You guys just killed Dr. Love.
Yes, we did.
I think Lonnie would have picked Dr. Love.
Dr. Love needs to go to the doctor.
Holy shit. Okay. In the next matchup, if you guys murder this one, I will be very dissatisfied with you. Deuce.
The studio version.
Oh, Deuce.
Love her all I can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Probably one of the best power pop Kiss songs of all time. Daniel, you're going to start us, please.
Deuce is one of my favorite songs, but not the studio version on that first album. Kiss Alive, it's the greatest, one of the greatest opening tracks to a live performance ever. And Alive 3, that's a good version as well, an updated version with Eric Singer doing some stuff on the drums. Very good. Two of my favorite performances of this song. But the studio version, I'm not so sure about the studio version. When you listen to Dress to Kill, I think I enjoy the clean sound. However, it's a more of a pop album, but probably Kiss, the best pop album Kiss ever did, I think. I Love Her All I Can, you can't go against that riff. It's pop perfection. Yeah, exactly. You just want to start to sing that song. Maybe one of Kiss's top five pop songs of all time, you know. So the studio version of Deuce, you know, Deuce is one of my favorite songs. But I really don't enjoy that studio version as much as I do the live versions that were made after that one. So I have to go with the Dress to Kill song on this one, the studio version.
Oh. Get up and get Daniel out of here.
Just get things exciting. Get up and get
Daniel out of here.
Yeah. I'm going to Ken. Ken, please help.
Deuce, you're going to get help there.
Yeah. Deuce, even, you know, the production on the first album was not the greatest, but it's still good enough to show off Deuce. I mean, Deuce is just
one of the people saying
hardest hitters on that album. And you know, it's been a staple since the beginning, I guess, right? Have they not played it any time? I don't know. Probably at some point they didn't play it, but pretty much it's a staple, and I don't know. The other ones, it's a good pop song. It's catchy, but is it a real, I mean, I gotta go listen to it. No, I'd rather listen to Deuce. Deuce is the great classic. It deserves to be a classic because it's that good of a song.
Yeah, it's mind blowing that "Love All I Can" is a leftover from the Wicked Lester sessions.
Yeah, you know, well, there's other songs like that too that from Wicked Lester that were pretty good when he turned it into Kiss. But yeah, Deuce wins easily for me. Even though I do love the other song, as a Kiss song, it's fantastic, Deuce.
Sorry, I'm having tech issues. So
I picked Deuce, by the way, Julian.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I haven't lost complete focus. No, I've lost my mouse, so I'm like trying to use a mouse.
You need a mouse trap.
Using a Mac without a mouse is not fun. Mark.
Oh, boy. Okay, so it's down to me now.
Studio versions.
Yes, I know. Studio versions, I know. Here's the thing. A lot of the things that Daniel brings up, it's hard to argue with because, you know, Deuce is a great song, and it's always been such a live staple, such a powerhouse of a song, you know. And on the album, it just doesn't have that firepower that it does on the live albums, you know?
No way.
And, you know, Love Her All I Can, while it's not exactly something that's a live staple by any stretch of the imagination, it's so good. I mean, it's so catchy. The guitar playing is so good. I love the harmonized vocals on it. It's so good. It's something that, you know, it's something that gives it the advantage in this. But, you know, Daniel, me and you are like brothers on this podcast. Okay, I know that we're like from the same mother almost.
Brothers from another mother.
Yes, exactly. So, so my heart wants to go with Love Her All I Can, but I can't without feeling guilt or feeling that the Kiss world would be shattered into oblivion if I don't go with Deuce, because Deuce does have a very important part to play in the whole Kiss aura there. So I'm going to have to go with Deuce. I'm sorry.
Not the studio version. It's terrible. Again,
I was going to have to, eject you if you did if you went the other way.
It was close, though. It was close. Like, very close.
I was looking at the next pick. I'm like, there's nothing on this.
Listen to the people.
That was Ascot. That was the
Ascot. No.
All right. So Deuce goes through and Love Her All I Can does not. Next round is I versus Flaming Youth. Two very anthemic songs. Two very different. Actually, no, they're from the same producer. So
yes.
Who was it? It was Joey Middleton, I believe, said something with this. Don't mess this up, Mark. No Ezrin on these. Yeah, well, there's Ezrin on both of these ones.
No Ezrin.
And Mark's going to get started. I versus Flaming Youth.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
I Flaming Youth.
Well, this one's going to be a little bit easier for me. When I listened to I the first time, I thought that it was a pretty good song. The one thing that about it that sort of made me kind of roll my eyes a bit, it was the thing that Daniel just showed a second ago, was the finger snapping part in the middle, which is kind of like, ooh, what are we listening to here now all of a sudden? But overall, it's a pretty strong song. And I mean, what a way to end the record too. It's a great song. Flaming Youth. Now, while I've had good things to say so far about the songs that have appeared on Destroyer so far, as far as Detroit Rock City and also, what's a King of the Nighttime World. I can't with any, you know, straight face say the same about Flaming Youth. Flaming Youth is flaming hot garbage. Okay. So I think that that's going to have to go into, if it was up to me, it's going to have to go into the bin. Okay. This is absolutely terrible. I is so much better in my opinion. It's just, there's more power to it. It's more rocking. I mean, and Eric Carr, come on, man. What a performance on drums in that song.
True. With him.
So I'm going with I.
All right. Ken.
Wait a minute. Eric Carr didn't play drums on that song.
Okay. Alan Schwartzberg or whatever.
But that's okay. It doesn't matter anyway. Either way,
I'm sure Eric did. Nobody fine. Knew that when it came out, anyways.
I don't know why they didn't. You know, they'd fly live. It seemed like what was the big deal?
So that comment about how the hell did I make it this far again?
Check it out, Julian. Look at the matchups,
the facts. Here we go.
I fight hell to hold you in the last round.
That's
and
like,
then in the first round, it beat Radar for Love.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
See? Okay.
I or Flaming Youth?
I have to go with I. I that's one of my first favorite songs I listened to when I first got The Elder. That was a standout for me. Probably the first and last songs on the album were the, you know, well, the American, I guess, release version of it, right? Song sequence. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh yeah, this sounds more like Kiss than anything else on the album, really. Anthem, catchy, you know, great Gene vocals, just missing the solo was the snaps instead of a real guitar solo. That's the only thing I was missing is a guitar solo. Flaming Youth was okay. I you know, it's not a bad song. I can tolerate it. I don't like the, you know, the carnival noises in the middle of a calliope or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
Is it calliope? Calliope. That's it.
That's a big word.
Like gymnasium.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anyway. I got to go with I. Plus it's Jesus.
How the hell is I getting this far?
Yeah.
Cause it's a good song.
Your token vote since I has now progressed. Flaming Youth or I?
It's my turn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just looking out, floundering that Mark said, and now Ken said a word and that I didn't even, I've never heard. What was that word, Ken, that you said?
What the?
Calliope?
Calliope. What the hell is that? Calliope?
It's the musical instrument.
Calliope. That makes that kind of noises throughout the.
I'm just learning here. Learning new words.
The reason why you should get rid of this song.
I mean, it's right up the roof.
The Bob Ezrin production thing. That
okay, but I'm just imagining the sessions when they're coming up with the idea.
Like, what?
Well, that's the finger snapping. That's a great idea, guys. We've never done that before. Let's do it. It's such a terrible idea. I was just
same
what
thing
Julian.
With Calliope.
Julian wants to say something.
You're going about finger snaps in I, but just imagine sitting in the studio in 1975 and Bob Ezrin comes in. You know, guys, what this song really needs is a calliope.
Calliope. Calliope.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so floundering and a calliope, two new words for me, and that's good. Okay, two good songs. Of course, they made it this far. One is a bit more rocking. That's the Elder version, the Elder song. But I've always had a hard time with the Elder. Everything from the cover to the sound of the album to the, you know, the story always felt so silly to me. I did enjoy the album that Swedish guy did a few years back. I think that was a great, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Way of doing the album. He must have spent hours and hours to do that album. I think you interviewed him, Julian, that guy. Yeah. I don't remember his name, but
Borhars.
Yeah, it was
Ancient Door or something like that.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't seen that album, go check that out. It was really cool. Such an homage to the Elder. But I can't get over that finger snapping and the silly sounds of that album, so I have to go with the other one. That's just the way it goes. Yeah.
Well, I still goes through. All right. We've got three left. All American Man, Secretly Cruel. There's that
secretly,
one that you were talking
that's
about.
That's the one.
All American Man.
Yeah. So, Ken, get us started. All American Man, Secretly Cruel. Cruel.
I really love the, that side four for the most part on the live two. Secretly Cruel is a pretty good song by Gene. One of the better ones off of Asylum they did. But it's kind of his paint by numbers kind of thing. I really like All American Man by Paul off of Alive 2. Just a great, cool, rocking song. Nothing bad about it. So, and of course, great guitars and so on, and drums are great on that too. So, yeah, I actually got to go with All American Man because I've always loved that one. So I have to go with it.
All right, Daniel.
Yeah, I would have liked to see All American Man on Love Gun instead of Then She Kissed Me. That would have been great. I think it was a throwaway on that fourth side of Alive 2. It deserved better because it's such a great song. You know, the riff is so cool. Even though it's very reminiscent of Burn by Deep Purple. But the Paul singing and the Bob Kulick solo, so cool. All American Man, all the way for me.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I mean, as much as I love Asylum, I mean, I think that's the one song that sort of was the sleeper on that album. No wonder Buddy did his version of it, because it probably is better than the one that's on the album, to be honest. So yeah, All American Man it is.
All right. So, USA, USA,
USA. USA, USA,
no.
USA.
Oh, no. USA. Not again.
All right. Did we ever do an episode, The Best of Gene in the 80s?
No, no. We didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
There's an idea. Yeah,
that's a good idea, Julie. Good idea.
The 80s, starting from Unmasked.
Just right? With how you voted Secretly Cruel out, which is, I think, one of the stronger songs Gene contributed to the group. But again, going up against classic Kiss is a tough thing. Next round, next matchup is I'm a Legend Tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Shock me.
Daniel's going to start us. Shock me.
Yeah, just because you know I prefer Paul Stanley vocals instead of Ace Frehley vocals. Yeah, if you listen to the vocals, the killer songs takes the cake, of course. Shock Me is such an Ace Frehley classic. But to me, it wasn't really his best song ever. As I mentioned previously, I like Rocket Ride better. I like Cold Gin better. I even like Strange Ways better, even though Peter sang that one. So I think he has a plethora, is that a word, of songs?
Plethora.
Yeah. You can say it either
plethora.
Way. Plethora.
Yeah, of songs that are better than this one. So it never really caught on to me, that shocked me. So I'll give my vote to the killer song because... let's see how this goes.
Well, Joey, you're wrong. No contest. Daniel disagrees. Ken.
You're muted.
I gosh darn it, I'm muted.
Classic. Classic Ken.
Classic.
With a K. Classic.
Yes. With a K, yeah. Yes. For me, yeah, I'm going to let you tell you, it's a pretty good song. To me, those songs from Killers don't seem...
Come on now.
I guess compared to some other songs.
Lord.
Shock Me is classic. Classic Ace. Classic riff. One of his best guitar solos on there. The drumming of Peter on there is I always say, is fantastic on that song. I just love it because it was different for him. Shock Me wins easy for me.
All right. Mark is going to be the decider here.
So Shock Me is great. I love that song. You know, that's such a great song. But one little interesting, I'll be very quick with this. When Killers came out, I remember I was getting into vinyl again. And I when I was younger, and I was like, what is this? It was a very odd looking cover and stuff like that. And I grabbed it and I listened to it. And those four songs really stood out to me. And I really loved them. I mean, you know, Nowhere to Run and I'm a Legend Tonight and Partners in Crime and Down in My... But they were so, like, so great. They were rocking. And I listened to the rest of the record and I was like, the rest of the album was good, but they sounded so dinosaurish compared to those songs at the time. You know what I mean? I was like, this sounds really old compared to this. And don't forget, I was younger then too, so I didn't understand the value of those songs back then. So that album really was a very important record for me at the time as well. And I disagree with Ken about him saying that these songs are like not fully, found out and written, because I think honestly that when your record label comes up to you and says, listen, man, your last album is completely tanked. You better write some good shit now because we're writing our greatest hits thing. So you better write something good and rock and rollish. I think he was under the gun to write something decent or better than decent. So I think that little bit of a fire under him to write some of these songs. So I'm going to go with the Killers song.
Yay!
Wow.
You guys just eliminated Shock Me.
Yeah, finally. I've tried every round.
I don't know.
Oh. Oh.
Oh, boy.
But I don't agree, because a classic is a classic is a classic. Yeah. But the first time I heard A Legend Tonight, what a terrible thing for those four songs, or at least two of the four, to be throwaways.
Yeah, that's just true.
I'm A Legend Tonight is a fully formed, completely finished, powerful and attractive song. It really is a stunning piece.
It would have been better with the Creatures production, a lot better.
I don't think that one would be, to be honest.
I do.
There are other songs on there that sound, Partners in Crime sounds great with Creatures production. You can hear it on the box set, and for $1,000 you can hear it on vinyl from the box set. It's a great song, but I'm A Legend Tonight, and let's continue this conversation.
I'm A Legend Today.
Final pick of today's episode is how this one got this far: Reputation versus Nowhere to Run.
Killers.
And Mark, you're gonna get started. So maybe
Nowhere to Run.
Another Killers track's gonna go.
That's
through.
The best song of the
four. I'll make it quick. I mean, Nowhere to Run is such a great song. I mean, compared to Reputation, I mean, come on. I mean, I don't think there's any contest in this. Nowhere to Run is a song that should have had its place on a classic Kiss album, and unfortunately, it just ended up on a greatest hits record. So, what a great song!
Reputation.
No, Nowhere to Run.
Oh, okay. Just checking, Daniel.
Me and Mark are planning a third installment of the Kiss Riff. Episodes, and I've been playing the Nowhere to Run riff, intro riff, the whole week. It's such a cool riff, and the singing on this song as well, it's over the top. So singing, cool riff, I like Bob Kulick's solo as well. The downside to this is these songs didn't really, much like Rocket Ride on the final side of Alive 2, you would have wanted them on a, a studio album, because Nowhere to Run could have been something really special. And I recall Paul Stanley doing it on a Kiss cruise acoustically, and it sounded great back then as well. And I think it was maybe 2015-16 or somewhere around there. So you guys go and check that out on YouTube. That's a cool version of Nowhere to Run. So Nowhere to Run, of course.
All right, Ken. You can vote token wise for Gene.
She's got a reputation.
The silver tongue of Ken. No. I've never heard it before. That's your real singing voice. Cool.
No, that's not my real singing voice. That's a compilation. Like
Cookie Monster. Cookie Monster voice.
Cookie Monster. Yeah, exactly. That's the real Cookie Monster.
Cookie.
All
right, so what's it going to be, Ken?
I'm Batman. Anyway.
Choose.
I choose Nowhere to Run. Yeah, Nowhere to Run beats it by a mile. Easy.
10 miles.
Yeah.
And that's I love.
The songs, right. The final part of round four is next. We'll probably be able to do that in one episode. One song, because of the odd numbering, gets a pass.
Mm-hmm.
That is Nowhere Down on Your Knees. So a third
Killer song.
Killers is still alive in this.
Very nice.
And,
cool.
I have to do the math, but we may need to just at the start of round four, put that up against something in the hat, or put just do a random pick of two songs out of the hat, and one goes back in for round four just to equalize the numbers left so that everything finishes up, so there's just not one thing left in the tub. Probably better to do it before we get into this. These are all the hard hitters. I mean, there are some shockers in today's matchups, and there are some shocking decisions by you three. And I'd just like to point out to the audience that all of these choices were made by Daniel, Mark, and Ken. I had nothing to do with any of the selections that I've heard today. I like to separate myself and just simply say that the opinion of the host are not necessarily reflected in this episode. Because I've probably got some dumbass picks that I would make as well. But we had again, you know, there's been a ton of people watching this and joining in with their thoughts on the episode as we've gone along. Had some technical glitches along the way, not least my freaking mouse dying. That's why you always keep your battery mouse nearby. It's not the battery. That's what my first little potty break was to do that. So that's it. That's a long episode because we talked about a whole bunch of other stuff at the beginning of the episode. So we'll just leave it there. Again, thank you to everyone who's chimed in and joined us. We do appreciate your thoughts. If you're watching this after the fact, chime in with your opinions and just let these guys know how bad some of their life choices are. And let us know your picks if you're watching later as well. So that's it for now from Mark, Ken, Daniel, myself, and Lonnie. We do appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.
Plethora.